Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Welcome back as we continue our recap discussion for the 6th annual NICE project.
I'm thinking of Gerald O'Hara, you know, Scarlett's dad. Mm-hmm. Remind me, because again, it's been spring since I read the book, but right before he dies, it's his other daughter is trying to get him to sign an oath of loyalty
yes.
to the North.
Yes.
And then that's what causes him to kind of go off and he rides the horse.
Yeah,
and
he is... He's so enfeebled that what Sue Ellen is doing borders on criminal. And you can think in terms of like modern situations we've heard of where, you know, there's this, for example, there's a suspicion that, To Kill a Mockingbird author, Harper Lee's, you know, once her sister, who was very protective of her, died, that someone else got, you know, her to sign things that she might not have signed in her better days of, you know, before she kind of, she had, I think, Alzheimer's or something. She had, Harper Lee had some sort of mental decline in her later years, and her sister protected her from being taken advantage of. And so this is what Sue Ellen is doing to her own father, and she's doing it for such, you know, cheap, cheesy reasons, you know, and that it's not to say that, politically speaking, holding on to the old South is good. That's not what I'm trying to say. I mean,
right.
This is a human family drama in that moment, and she's doing something very ugly to her father, and it just breaks him. He cannot deal with it, and he takes off, you know, thinking he's going to go fight for what he believes in. And of course, because he's older and the horse is now a farm horse, not a, you know, a jumping show horse kind of wonderful thing that he had before the war, he falls and breaks his neck. You know, it's just very sad. But yeah, so that's definitely a very heart-wrenching part of his story, and it certainly helps us understand the relationship between Sue Ellen and Scarlett, which is acrimonious at best.
Right. And in our discussion about abuse earlier, mm-hmm. elder abuse is not something we didn't
touch on
in that category, but you could define that mm-hmm. act of Sue Ellen's as a form of elder abuse.
Yeah, and that whole scenario is not really in the movie. That's not why in the movie Gerald O'Hara rides off and breaks his neck on that horse. In the movie, it's a completely different scenario. In the book, it is his daughter, Sue Ellen, who causes his death, basically. Another thing that I think is very interesting in Gone with the Wind that I personally can relate to is the idea of nightmares. Because when Scarlett is first married to Rhett, if you will remember, and they're on their honeymoon in New Orleans on the steamboat or whatever, the paddle wheel boat, she has nightmares. And she, you know, in the book, it's very vivid and spelled out poetically by Margaret Mitchell that her nightmares is she's running through a mist and she can't, you know, she knows something at the end of, she's trying to get to something where she'll be safe, and she's running through the mist and she's terrified. That's her dream. And Rhett wants to protect her. Rhett wants to make that dream go away, and he tells her, you know, when you feel safe, you won't dream that dream anymore. Well, she does keep dreaming that dream. And then at the very end of the story, after Melanie dies, she's literally awake, physically running through the mist to go find Rhett. And she, you know, in the book it's very clear, she's like, it's like my nightmare, it's like my dream, Rhett is my answer, you know. And it's a, you know, that's where the love story, you know, but she's questioning her own sanity when she has that dream throughout the book. And you know, there have been nights where I wake up in a cold sweat, just terrified that, you know, I've somehow been exposed to COVID-19, I'm gonna get it and I'm gonna die. And then it takes me several minutes to think, wait a minute, that was a dream. I haven't been around anybody. I haven't been exposed, you know. And I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm safe. I'm in my home. I'm isolating. I'm taking every precaution. My husband's taking every precaution. You know what I mean? I mean, but that nightmare sensation of that initial moment when you wake up and the nightmare is still so real.
Right.
I totally relate to that in this book in a way that in my previous readings of this book, I never did that before. You know?
Right. Right, yeah, and I mean, that was honestly where I thought that Scarlett and Rhett's marriage was the most functional.
Yeah.
When, like, okay, you had a nightmare, I'm comforting you.
Yeah.
And there was no sarcasm. No. They were both emotionally open in those moments. That's the only hope I had for that.
I know, and didn't you in those moments feel like, why couldn't they have sustained that? Why did they fall back into their old patterns? But we wouldn't have had such a great story if they didn't. So, but yeah, I agree. In those moments, you know, they were, and again, the way Margaret Mitchell writes is so good. I mean, she really pulls you into those moments where you can feel Scarlett's side of it and Rhett's. And you see it, you feel it. It's really effective. And,
And I think you bring up an excellent point about comparing the nightmare scene to the real-life nightmare where she's running through the mist, running toward Rhett, who, you know, is kind of the salvation, the ultimate goal. There's a lot of parallels to real-life mental illness that it's not going to be another person that cures you.
Right.
It's going to come from within and, you know, proper treatment and, you know, things like that. But it's not going to be one other person who is your salvation in that.
And isn't it so interesting that Margaret Mitchell chose in that moment to have Rhett say no? You know, he's waited forever for Scarlett to say, I love you and I really mean it and I don't love Ashley and I never did and you're the only one for me, right? That should be the happy ending. He should embrace her. They go off into the sunset and live happily ever after. He says, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Too little, too late, you know? And then Scarlett is left with, like you said, the happiness, the security, the safety, the joy, everything good that she wants in life, she's not going to find in him in that moment. He's not the answer. She's going to have to figure it out for herself. And that's when she says, tomorrow is another day. I'll go home to Tara. I'm going to, you know, find my strength myself, and then I'll go get him, you know. And I just love that. I love that Margaret Mitchell doesn't give us that happy Hollywood ending.
Yep.
Gives us instead a broken ending for both of them. I mean, Rhett is leaving as a broken man. Scarlett is a broken woman. They're going their separate ways, but I personally have absolute full faith that they are going to get back together again. In a healthy way.
I have faith, but I do have faith.
I know.
That Scarlett will survive it and be better for it.
Right. I agree.
Happens.
I agree. Yeah.
That she is resilient.
Yeah. And that's what everything that came before gives us that faith, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's only at the very end of that book that all the crap that we've endured by watching her misbehave, whine around, be selfish, hurt other people, all the stuff she's done that's led her to that moment, finally it all makes sense, you know, and it works. It's a very, really, very well written book. But, okay, let's talk about Little Women a little bit in terms of isolation. We covered this a little bit ago, but I do think that it's so interesting that even though Little Women is set in the Civil War, just like Gone with the Wind, it's so much less descriptive about the war. As I was thinking about this, I was thinking there's still that sense of isolation, like we talked about, the little girls, the young girls are left alone, you know, with just the housekeeper, when the father's off to war and then Marmee has to go and take care of him. So they do experience that isolation from war, right? But I'm thinking, you know, how that plays out as they continue in their lives. You know, it's because of that isolation, even though they're not seeing the war right outside their window or whatever, it's a threat over their head, right? Just like COVID-19 is a threat for all of us. Even in isolation, I'm still feeling threatened, okay? I've made it this far. I plan on making it till, you know, that 70% immunity in the whole country is out there, but that threat is still there. It's not gone. And so that sense of isolation, especially for young people, I think is terrifying, very hard. And it is because they're isolated and yet still trying to do certain things, like in today's world, people are still having to go to work if they're lucky enough to have a job. You know, Beth goes to help the poor German immigrants because that's what she's expected to do, you know, as her mother's daughter. And that's how she gets ill the first time, you know, with scarlet fever. And that scarlet fever impacts her health to the point where she never really recovers, and eventually that it's the after effects of that that kill her. And we are hearing in the news that COVID-19 survivors can have long-term effects that could very easily kill them, you know, at some time in the future, much earlier than they would have, you know, died had they never contracted COVID-19. I mean, some of this stuff is like eerily similar, you know, not similar, but you can relate to it in an eerie sort of way. So you have these girls enduring, you know, this sense of isolation without their mother and father, which you succinctly said a little while ago really, you know, brought them together as a family, you know, because they were so isolated without their parents, they became even closer than they were before.
Join us next time as we continue our recap discussion for the 6th annual NICE project. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.